Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to the program. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Good, beautiful Thursday morning to you.
Oh, back at you, Fred, and good morning to you, Chris Woodward.
Hello.
It's a beautiful day in your world, Chris.
It is. Huh? It's a beautiful day every day.
In his neighborhood.
In his neighborhood. Thanks for joining us. If you want to join us on the internet and watch the show, the website is streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. We also have a Facebook page. We live video stream there, and we post the stories that we discuss, the original sources from which we get the facts of which we speak about, and that is Facebook. Just type in today's issues. Isn't that right? Today's issues. Facebook.
Today's issues. Yes, sir.
I don't know if you had to type in live.
No, you just search for today's issues and click through.
And the live video stream is there. Okay. We hope everybody's having a nice day. I know it's, as we've talked about the weather ad nauseum here, it's burning up out in the Southwest.
Yeah.
You know, but other parts of the country, you know, not so much.
But, maybe seeing an end, or not the tail end here coming up of hot summer.
Oh no, no,
you don't
this
think
is
so?
Fake fall.
Fake fall. It's they fake do fall. Call it. There is a fake fall. There.
Yes, it comes in and gets you all excited, and people start saying about things about pumpkin spice, and then it just comes roaring back in, and your pumpkin spice, you know, melts on the porch.
I remember last year we did have where we live. We had like 101, like in the middle of September for about 2 days, just to remind us.
Yeah.
Just September.
That we're not in charge.
September reminding us that it was, I can bring summer back anytime I want. So, yeah, fall will be here before you know it. All right, Chris, what is your lead story today?
Well, I have some positive news on top of some other news out of the great state of Hawaii. Certainly everybody knows they've had some wildfires there, and that's been a terrible situation, which I will get into in just a moment. The positive news here is that Maui Public Schools have begun to reopen. They're now enrolling students from fire-affected areas to try to get kids back to some sense of normalcy, and certainly teachers there in Hawaii. Where, unfortunately, we do have at least 110 people dead, 1,300 remaining unaccounted for. But in another bit of good news here, I'll share this link in just a minute. Daily Mail had a story called Miracle in Maui, 60 wildfire survivors rescued from a single house there. So hopefully, as more people get out to do search and rescue efforts, we'll get some positive stories like this one.
1,300 people unaccounted for?
Still missing.
Yes. At least.
Well, by now, I hate to bring this up, but I think it's what we all know. By now, if you've been unaccounted for, you're probably lost in the fire.
Yeah, or I don't know, drowned out in the ocean, or yeah. Or
I mean,
what
that's
have
a,
you.
That's a,
when yeah. When was this? When what was the date?
August 8th.
August 8th. So we're
17th.
17th.
You're not going to have people just wandering around by now,
yeah,
I don't
that,
think.
That's
what I'm saying.
The expectation.
That's my point. It's horrible to think about, but
two of the people, the death toll now is at 110. And I was reading an AP story on this morning. Two of the people identified were both 78, 79 years old. Now, they have said they've found corpses of very small corpses, which means there are right. Children, too. Another interesting aspect on the story, you may have heard, there's the gentleman who's in charge of the emergency management agency there
like a statewide FEMA?
Yes.
Okay.
He has been under fire from some circles because he didn't sound the sirens. Like if you live in the southeast, tornadoes, you hear sirens. in
Hawaii. And you know what to do when you hear those.
You know what to do. You head for the enclosed area or right. get to your shelter, whatever the case may be. In Hawaii, the sirens traditionally are warnings about tsunamis.
Okay.
That's when they go off.
Okay.
They did not go off there, and this gentleman, his name is Herman Adaya, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. He says, we were afraid that people would have gone Maka, M-A-U-K-A. This is fascinating, which is the Hawaiian directional term that can mean toward the mountains or inland. What he's saying is that the fires were coming from those areas. They didn't want people running towards the fire, thinking there was a tsunami. That's why the sirens were going off. So you're trying to move away from the coast.
Right.
And he didn't want them running towards the fire. That is what he's saying in the way of an explanation as to why they didn't put those sirens on.
And that would make sense, because a wildfire like was occurring is probably not a typical occurrence.
Extremely rare.
Very, very rare. Mm. So people hear those sirens go off, they're going to think. So that's what when I hear a siren, I think it's either at 12 noon on a Saturday, it goes off as, I guess, as a test in a lot of towns in the South. But I think tornado.
Yes.
And you make the preparations in response to that siren. So that makes more sense. I thought the guy was just a complete incompetent when he went, because the first explanation was, well, we didn't think it would help matters. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. But this explanation does make some sense.
Yeah.
It does. CBS is CBS personality Nora O'Donnell. She certainly made him look bad, because she tweeted last night around 6 o'clock Central. CBS News has learned Maui's emergency operations chief had no background in disaster response. It's his department that is responsible for setting off warning sirens, which rang silent during the fires. That's how she covered that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we had this kind of updated information.
Yeah, we all across America, we hear the announcements that break in on radio from your local weather service alerting you to severe weather, right?
Right. Get them on our phones sometimes.
Right. It's very annoying. That a very annoying sound.
Yeah.
It's annoying on purpose.
Right.
So it gets your attention and you go, you know it's serious.
Yeah.
We all know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
right? So I'm just wondering, you know, did they issue some kind of a alert in that way, where you would have not a alarm bells going off, so to speak, sirens.
Right.
Sirens, not alarm bells, but you know what I'm talking about. Where you come on and this is the emergency broadcasting system, and we're letting you know there's a wildfire that's out of control. I don't know if that happened or not, how much it could have helped. You know, no. I'm sure this will all be investigated. What was the actions and response of the people who were responsible for warning others? But from what I could tell, that put that aside. What I can tell just by reading about it and looking at the pictures, both still pictures and drone video, it was a complete and total incineration for miles and miles. And so if in fact you've got 60, 70, 80 mile an hour winds, mm-hmm. and you've got a place that was very dry, they said, right? And there you can't stop that.
Yeah, sometimes there's not anything you can
do. There's nothing you can do.
Right.
The fire department is helpless in a situation like
right.
that.
Yeah. One of the things they've been saying is that these high winds, as you were just mentioning, what happened was that power lines began to come down, sparks ignited the fires.
Well, there you go.
So you have high winds, power lines coming down, sparking the fires, and then the wind picks up the flames.
Right. We've all seen this out west. It happens almost annually. Mm-hmm. Out west, they have these fires, and they rage on for days and weeks, despite the best efforts of firefighters, because you can't stop Mother Nature with winds going, jumping and carrying embers 200 yards and another fire start. You know what I'm saying? Well, we see what's happened in Canada. Of course, that's a little bit different in the sense that it's a massive expanse of land that's
right.
under fire, that been on fire in Canada that, you know, nobody can control. But I'm just saying the winds mm-hmm. can carry fires fast, and you can't stop them.
Faster than a human being can run. That's why out west they're always telling people to basically abandon ship. You need to evacuate your homes. And people say, well, we're going to wait and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes it'll right. jump. It'll move so quickly. It's not only behind you, it's in front of you now.
Right. That's right.
You know, and
that's right.
That's why people don't listen to the warnings sometimes get trapped.
And these fires in Hawaii went to the ocean. I mean,
yeah.
you know, went all the way. Look at that. Look at those pictures you're looking at.
Because these houses are on the ocean. Mm-hmm. So you say, well, we'll just head for the water.
Right.
Well, you're still close to the fire.
Right. right.
Billions of dollars.
But anyway, just think about 1,300 people still unaccounted for, and you know that that's going to be a long process. I mean, even if they ever find the remains, to look for the remains of the
But there was a Catholic church that was untouched. That was strange. And then a house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, if you're looking for a good news story, Chris, you mentioned it. One house had 60 people mm-hmm. that lived, that survived in the area. So anyway, President Biden is going there. Is that right?
Yes, he's going next week. I don't know what has taken him so long. As I mentioned, the fires began on August 8th. Certainly nobody expected him to be there on August 9th. He's being criticized for.
All right, he had a pathetic answer to this. We all know he said, "Ask about the fires, like in the immediate aftermath." Mm-hmm. What a couple of days, and he said, "No comment."
Twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but can I say something here about this situation?
Sure.
That we all know what's going on here, and I'm not giving a pass for President Biden. Because he's made his life's been one gaffe and one untruth after another politically.
Right.
The fella is getting senile. I don't know what the legal, technical, medical definition of senility is, but he's getting where he's getting where you just, if it's your grandpa,
right.
you just say, well, he didn't really understand the question. He didn't mean to be offensive.
Yeah.
He's getting older and unable to grasp the reality of the situation. So I think in this situation with Biden, mm-hmm. he's enough of a he's smart. In his prior life, he was smart enough not to answer a question.
Right.
That stupid. Okay.
Yeah.
To say, I have no comment on a natural disaster that killed hundreds of Americans. He would have just said, well, our hearts go out to those people. We're going to do everything we can to help them.
FEMA's already working.
That's the answer for every Democrat and Republican president since we've been a country. Right. So in that sense, I'm going, you know, you really, for Biden, you really can't 100% hold him accountable anymore for what he's saying because of what I just described.
You're saying he had no comment because he couldn't come up with one.
Yeah, because he's not thinking clearly because he's not.
Thoughts and prayers. We're in constant communication with something.
Well, another thing is in terms of the delay in going to Hawaii, again, call me a liberal, but I don't find much fault in that either because, number one, you don't just get on a jet. You don't just take a presidential entourage. That takes some planning and time. You don't just usually take it on a moment's notice. The second thing is, I don't think these people in Hawaii want a presidential visit right now. Okay? They're trying to recover, find people. They don't want the distraction of to the degree that it would be a distraction. And I think that's what Biden or Karine Jean, let me be clear, Pierre said the other day, you know, so. You know, I got 99 reasons to to be against Biden's policies, but this is not one of them.
Is it bad optics, though, in the sense that days after Hurricane Katrina, we had telethons and celebrities and political figures on television asking for money and are encouraging people to donate things and blood and whatnot, and we've not had that following Hawaii?
Who do you blame for that?
Well, the Biden administration.
Why?
Well, I mean, Bush was blamed for not going to New Orleans right away.
Well, but he was blamed by some of the Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, it was political theater.
I just saw up on we have a Fox News feed in our studio. The White House, not that just popped up. The White House answer to Republican criticisms about Biden's apparent inaction about Hawaii. They said the White House said, we will not be lectured by Republicans who, and this I'm just summarizing, who don't believe in climate change, which was the reason for the fire in Maui. So you're going to get all kinds of back and forth.
Everything has to turn political.
Yeah, everything turns
even
political.
A natural disaster, which probably happened 100 years ago, before we had records of, quote, climate change.
It's
shameful on the part of the Democrats right there to do something like that. But anyway, I know there are a lot of celebrities and people that are helping to raise money in 8 Days of Hope, Samaritan's Purse, Southern Baptist, and there are many other charities that will help these poor folks.
And the federal government will, I'm sure, be through FEMA.
You know, one aspect of this that is secondary, but still I thought is a shame, is that this was evidently I've never been there. I've been to Oahu, which is the island Honolulu's on. Mm-hmm. I've been around that whole island. Absolutely beautiful. The North Shore, to go and watch those waves and those surfers on the North Shore of Oahu, just I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
That day, Walker Wesley and I went out there. We were over there. Anyway, this town, what's the name of the town?
Lahaina.
It was a sort of it was touristy, but it was an authentic Hawaiian town with local restaurants and shops and museums and all kind of things like that. You know,
not going to find Baskin Robbins there.
It was sort of real Hawaii,
if
you want to say that. So now that it's been completely decimated, you know, you'll have to go in and rebuild, and you never will be able to recapture really that sort of environment. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? So
it's tough.
All right. Next story, Chris.
Well, I want to have some continuing coverage of something that happened this week in Maryland, where a court there ruled that a Maryland school district can continue to keep students' so-called gender confusion from their parents after a federal appeals court ruled the plaintiffs or parents did not have standing in the case. The court said these parents could not prove that their kids were transitioned in secret, therefore they didn't have standing, and the court dismissed the case. I've got some audio here of a young lady named Kaylee McGee White. She works with the Washington Examiner. She was on Fox and Friends this morning talking about this and saying Americans have having it, they've had it with the tyranny of the minority here. Clip 6.
And this is how a lot of Americans feel. And this is on a number of issues, not just transgenderism, but take transgenderism, for example. About, 4% of the population identifies as a gender different than their sex. And yet the other 95% are being asked to give up their basic expectations of safety and fairness in women's sports and women's restrooms. They're being asked to accommodate new language standards, to use preferred pronouns, even if they disagree with this. And think about this on other issues as well. For example, climate change. About 30% of voters think that climate change is a priority that the government should be setting on top. The other 70%, what do we have to deal with? We have to deal with a federal government that is ham-handedly forcing new emission standards on us, forcing us to buy electric vehicles, trying to ban gas stoves, and we don't want any of it.
Well, but you don't know enough. That's the view of the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. You are commoners. You're stupid. You don't understand, quote unquote, the science. So we're going to make the decision for you.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to children, Fred, you said something this morning in our story meeting. What is this really about? This is about the fact that the Biden administration and those on the left in this country believe that children belong to the state, not the parents. That's what this is really about.
I take you back to Hillary Clinton. It takes a village.
Right.
And everybody heard her say that. And really what she was reflecting was a Marxist attitude, is that the state ought to take control of the raising of the children to instill in them state values, because Christian parents, conservative parents, they are doing a disservice to their children.
Right.
We want a state. We want a secular value system in this country. And the way to do it is to grab the children and take them under your control. That is what's, Joe Biden a few weeks ago said, these are our children. Don't dismiss these little phrases from right. a Hillary Clinton and a Joe Biden. This is not just coming out of the blue. This is a belief. This is why you have in various venues across the country now, you have an education system that says we know what's best.
Right.
We are going to take control of that child who thinks today, a little boy who thinks he wants to be a girl. And we're going to tell the parents basically to butt out.
Or not tell them anything.
Or not tell them anything. And let's remind people, the current president of the American Library Association mm-hmm. describes herself as a Marxist lesbian.
Right.
Marxist. She's talking about her worldview. So these are the people, they may be in the minority, but these minority thinkers, these Marxists, now control so much.
They control many of the institutions.
The media.
In the country, yeah.
The media goes along with all of this. When I read Associated Press stories or CBS or ABC, it is all from the point of view that if you oppose the state transgender policy, you are the bad person. You are the threat to that agenda. And it's you're painted that way.
What's unfortunate is a lot of news outlets, medium and small ones especially, television, print, radio, what have you, they run AP material, and sometimes they do it verbatim, which is the only news people
Associated
get.
Associated Press.
Yes. And so that's why a lot of people are led to believe, okay, well, climate change must really be real and bad if they say it here. There's never a rebuttal.
And here's why, folks, I don't want you to misunderstand that we're not saying that the Democratic Party is all made up of Marxists. However, Marxism and quote-unquote progressivism share certain views about the supremacy of the state.
Mm.
All right? Now, Marxists and Marxism, they believe that the state has to grow powerful in order to enforce the revolution. Their belief is in communism, at some point the state will wither away because people are basically good at heart, and they will see communism as being the best thing for themselves. You won't even need a state after that, okay? I think we all know that's a pipe dream. However, progressives, again, in quotation marks, they also believe in the supremacy of the state, and so they share that part of the field, and that's why the policies advocated by either of those political ideologies oftentimes overlap, and it shows up over and over and over again. We're talking about education right now, but this has been going on for as long as progressives have been in charge, so much so that the beliefs of those who support abortion have always pushed for kids to be allowed to be taken to an abortion by teachers or counselors without the parents knowing. Why? The parents don't know what's best for the kids. The representatives of the state, that is in the public schools, they do know what's best. So from what kind of light bulbs you have, what kind of cars you drive, what kind of food you eat, that's coming, all right, to what happens to your children in school, parents, you're cut out. The state will take over. Go on vacation.
Hey, there's breaking news. We'll get to it in just a moment after the break. How about that?
Hey.
After the break, we'll do breaking news coming out of the state of Georgia. We'll talk about it momentarily. Stay with us.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Weilman.
A lot of people will call me stupid. I know that. Some will feel sorry for me. Others will snicker a little and say that I should grow up. We humans have a way of expressing our feelings without ever uttering a word. And reading all the expressions, I may come to the conclusion that this will be the attitude of many toward me. But it doesn't really matter what others think of me. What's important is what I think of myself and what the carpenter thinks of me. Somehow, if I have his approval and blessing, all the other snide remarks seem to have a way of diminishing in importance. So I guess that's the reason that what others think of me just isn't too important. Their opinion being relatively unimportant, I feel free to make the following known about myself. I believe it happened. I believe that basically it happened just the way we've been taught that it happened. I believe they took a just man, the most just man ever to walk on the face of this earth, and they nailed him to a tree. I believe they did it because of their selfishness and sinfulness. I believe he allowed it to happen. I believe that he had the power to stop it, destroy them all if he wished, but I believe he allowed them to do it because of his great love. I believe it broke his heart that inside he wanted so much to be loved by those who sought to destroy him. I believe that he forgave them, that he held no bitterness nor hatred toward them, and I believe that, in the irony of it all, his love was stronger than their hate. I believe that to this very day the most powerful weapon in the universe is the power of the love of the Galilean carpenter. I believe there's no weapon anywhere that can make a dent in it. And I believe that the only cure, yes, I said the only cure, to the basic troubles of the world today is the application of that love in our lives. I'm convinced that it has always been and will continue to be his will for us to love one another like he loves us. Yes, I believe that he did arise from the grave. I believe that he was fully dead when removed from the cross and placed in the tomb. And I'm convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that he conquered death with life, that he came alive again and lives today and will live forevermore. Add to that my belief that it is his greatest wish for us that we live that life with him here and now and in the life that is beyond death. No, I can't explain it. No one can. But I can experience it. Everyone can. No, I'm not perfect. I'm a miserable creature, unworthy of anything on my own merits. But I have a Savior, and therefore I no longer need to depend on my own merits, only my faith. Laugh, snicker, call me stupid. I guess that's the highest compliment you could pay me. But don't do it too loud. It could be that one day you might share my beliefs.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
For we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God and an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred and Chris. Surely you're like one of us. We got four people to pick from here listening to the program. No, we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. I mentioned before the break, there was a story. I just got text to me from Georgia, and this is no joke. We're not making this up. What is this, Ed?
Well, this is a letter, a formal letter to Governor Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, and it is written by Colton Moore, who's a state senator. This is what the letter says, "Dear Governor Kemp, we, the undersigned, being duly elected members of the Georgia House of Representatives and Georgia Senate, comprising 3/5 of each respective house, pursuant to Article 4, Section 2, Paragraph 7B, folks, if you're listening, you should know what that paragraph is. No, we don't know what that means.
So, he's citing the state constitution of Georgia.
Right. Hereby certify to you in writing with a copy to the Secretary of State that in our opinion, an emergency exists in the affairs of the state requiring a special session to be convened under that section for all purposes to include, without limitation, the review and response to the actions of Fani Willis." Now, that's the okay, Chris said he's posted the letter on the Facebook page.
What you just read is now on there.
Yeah.
It's a very short letter you just read. So the gentleman's name is what?
Is Colton Moore. He's a state senator. And it's copied to the Secretary of
now,
State.
Is he saying he's speaking on behalf of?
Well, the undersigned, I don't know. I have is one page. I don't know who signed it, but.
And I just threw it at you because it would just text to me. We, the undersigned, being duly elected. Oh, you don't know how many signatures there are.
I don't, but it does appear to mean that comprises 3/5 of each respective house. So that's probably the number you have to have in order to request special session.
Okay, so the...
And Fani Willis is the district attorney
in
Fulton County who's indicted Trump.
So they're trying to get Governor Kemp to call a special session of the legislature to stop her from...
Well, it says to...
that's what it sounds like to me. That would be...
To review and respond to.
Okay, go ahead, Pat.
And this comes within hours after Ms. Willis announced that she wants a trial date for Trump on March the 4th.
Which is the day before Super Tuesday.
Which would feed the idea that a lot of this, her actions are driven by politics. She is a Democrat. Why would she pick the Monday before Super Tuesday?
To influence the election.
Can I tell you fellas something?
Yeah.
I would agree with election interference if this were Biden v. Trump and this was October. Totally, completely agree. This is March, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trump only benefits from this. He doesn't benefit from being indicted, but he is a martyr for the cause. With millions of Americans, and he himself said the other day, "I just need one more indictment, and I secure the nomination." What I'm saying is, this doesn't hurt him at all. Whenever the trial is, it doesn't hurt him. People pretty much already got their minds made up, pro or against. So, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's right, I'm saying it doesn't. I'm saying this to his benefit. It doesn't hurt him.
Well, but we don't know. You've got one trial that is starting in January. That's the January 6th trial. Uh-huh. That starts just before the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary. I don't know when the others will start, but you could have a situation where President Trump is under tremendous legal pressure, and the day before Super Tuesday, I think it could.
So you think there's somebody going, you know what, on Monday before Super Tuesday, you think, is that when it's supposed to start?
Super Tuesday is March 5th.
And when is it supposed to start?
March 4th.
So you think on March 3rd, there are people going, you know, I'm undecided on Trump. Could go either way.
I do think that's possible.
There is always that one guy.
No, I don't think it's just one guy. I think, because here's the thing. We've talked about what would happen if in the minds of the average Republican voter, they begin to think Donald Trump is going to be in prison. Who do we then turn to?
They don't care.
Well,
I've talked to them. One of my best friends yesterday, we're talking.
Why did they pick the day before Super Tuesday? You think that's accidental?
Well, when are they going to pick?
Coincidental?
I don't know, but I mean, they got to pick someday.
Well, I mean, that's true, but I don't think it's a coincidence. That's all I'm saying. And even if you're right, which you are 99% of the time, okay, even if you're right that it doesn't hurt, to me, selection of that date goes to the motivation of Fonnie Willis.
Yeah.
This, to me, proves this is a witch hunt.
Well,
because in her mind, she thinks it does damage him.
Listen, like we've talked about this, the unfairness of a lot of this, we know it's the left wingers
right.
wanting to get Trump. We all know that. I guess this is a compliment of I don't know how to. I don't think anything hurts Trump.
Yeah.
I don't think anything hurts Trump. He can do whatever he wants to, say whatever he wants to, and he is adored.
Right.
By
a large percentage of Republican 50, voters.
50% of the Republican voters have already made up their mind. They know everything they need to know, and that's not going to change, I don't think.
Yeah.
If it doesn't change after the debate next week, is it next week?
Yeah, this coming Wednesday.
It's coming Wednesday.
Okay, if you have the debate going on next week, and you're going to have DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, you're going to have former Governor of South Carolina Haley, you're going to have the people that are challenging.
Right.
Okay.
Tim Scott.
They're all around, 3 to 15% at the most now? Right? If you believe the polls.
DeSantis, of course, is the only one in double digits.
And you believe the polls if it favors your guy. If it doesn't favor your guy, then who believes the polls?
Right.
Huh? Is that a true?
Everyone says that. Yeah.
Everyone says that. I'm just saying that if the debate, let's say Governor DeSantis does really well in the debate.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't know how you really have a debate when you have 6 or 7 people and you got 2 questioners. It's not really a debate. A debate to me is 2 people.
Yeah.
Maybe 3.
These are going to be talking points.
These are going to be talking points, which most people have already heard.
Yeah.
And the journalists are going to try to make the people answer hard questions, which is a good thing. But I'm just saying that if after the debate, I think that's the last chance to move the needle for any of these other candidates. This is me talking. And I've been wrong 7 times in my life. So this could be number 8.
Yeah.
But I'm saying if the needle doesn't move for Governor DeSantis or Tim Scott or any of the others after the debate next week, if you don't see a poll movement within a week of the debate where, let's say, you go, well, it looked like the debate helped DeSantis and he's trending up. He's at 25% now, 20%.
Right.
Or Tim Scott or Haley help me
Nikki
out.
Haley.
Nikki Haley. Or Ramaswamy.
Yeah.
Any of them. They're all capable of having a good night where people go, wow, I like that person. I think I'll.
Yeah, I wouldn't sleep on Ramaswamy. He's.
No. Why?
I wanted to say it.
You need Pepto-Bismol if you do? Is that what?
I had a Ramaswamy one time, and it kept me up all night.
Poor fella. Yeah, that's like having a name.
I do like him.
That's like being tagged your whole life with Wild Man as your last name, or Vitagliano.
V-tagged.
So I'm just saying if the needle isn't moved 3 to 5 to 7 days after the Republican debate for any one of these candidates, then I think what I'm saying today is true, that the people have already made up their minds and they're not going to change. They're not going to change. President Trump's numbers were really low in March. By really low, I'm talking about 30% or so. Alvin Bragg, the DA of New York, charges him with that, bookkeeping error.
Right.
Whatever. It was ridiculous. Almost everybody says. His numbers started. That was rocket fuel for Trump, And so. He skyrocketed then. DeSantis has gone down, if you believe the polls, and the other people can't get beyond 5% hardly.
Right.
So
I think
that's a long-winded way of saying I don't think anything. Everybody knows everything they want to. Either you don't like Trump or you do like Trump, and nothing's going to change that with regard to these court cases. I don't think.
I would just say, and you and I have talked about this a lot in terms of when candidates start dropping out on the Republican side. I've gone back and forth. I think probably the majority of those who will be on the debate stage this Wednesday, coming Wednesday, will probably at least wait to see how they perform in Iowa and New Hampshire.
You think so?
Yeah, I think you've got to at least give it a shot and see if you catch fire at that point. You might see some minor candidates drop out in October or November.
Well, and who knows? We don't really know about these polls.
Right.
And who's doing the polling and all that. I would just say this. If you look at the Real Clear Politics, which I go to every day, that is a composite. Am I right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Of all the polls.
The average.
I will respect a composite of all the polls rather than just an individual poll here or there, because sometimes these polls have 500 people for a national election. But the composite polls, if you go to Real Clear Politics right now, would you go with me there, Ed?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll go there.
Let's turn to page one. Go to Real Clear Politics. Okay, Fred's doing
it
too.
Top of the list.
Okay, go hit polls. Current polls.
Polls. Latest polls.
Okay, I'm going to scoot over here so I can see it with you.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the Republican presidential nomination Fox News poll. Now, this is not a state by state. This is national, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. I don't know what Fox News, who does their polling, whatever. Okay, they're showing Trump 53, DeSantis.
Up 37. On DeSantis.
I can do math.
Well, it's right here. I'm just saying. The spread. They give the spread.
Are you saying because I'm from Mississippi?
No. No.
I'll share the link of what you guys are talking
that's
about.
That's a stereotype that we can't count.
Listen.
Here's my point. Trump's 53. This is Fox News.
Right.
National poll, Republican voters, right?
Yeah.
I guess they're Republican voters. Trump 53, DeSantis 16. Go ahead and say his name, Ed.
Ramaswamy.
11. Nobody else is above 5.
Right, and Ramaswamy's coming on, so he has been gaining. Mm-hmm.
If this
steam.
Is a horse race, he's on the outside.
Yeah,
he's trying to chase down DeSantis, right? Yeah. So that hasn't changed much at all, and it doesn't matter what the news is of the day. Roughly, generally speaking, half the Republican Party voters are solidly behind President Trump. And the other half are looking for an alternative, but there's 8 alternatives,
right?
So they can't coalesce around one person who would legitimately challenge President Trump. Now I do know this. Hold on, Chris. Mm-hmm. Talking to people who live in Iowa and so forth, that's the first caucus state.
Yeah.
DeSantis is on the ground there heavily.
Yeah,
Governor DeSantis. He's going to every county personally. He's got a lot of troops, a lot of money invested in that. That's and so he is trying to do as you say. He's trying to win that caucus and then win New Hampshire. But now Chris Christie's rose up in New Hampshire.
Yeah,
you believe? You know he's maybe number two.
Yeah,
but still
because he's single-handedly keeping Dunkin' Donuts at the top of the food chain.
Let's see what you did there. I will say.
A minute. You can take the lawyer call.
It's the live free or die state.
Yeah, I'm not taking it.
If you want to eat donuts and die,
Christy
Craig.
Go ahead, Chris. Save us.
I was going to say if 7 candidates or so in this coming debate next Wednesday is too much, stick around and watch the one that's scheduled for September because the threshold in which they're supposed to qualify for that one, that's going to get us down to 3 or 4 people on the stage.
They're going to run out of money?
Well, yeah, they want a certain amount of polling. They want a certain amount of financial support, certain amount of support in all the states or whatever. So the one in September that's at the Reagan Library, which I'm glad to go to and cover in person for you if you want.
Yes.
That one's going to be probably about 4 people.
It's the second time you've mentioned that.
I'm just throwing it out there. I wanted to make sure you remember.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, though, that is Jan ready? All right, we'll revisit this issue in a minute. We want to have our guest, Jan Markell. She's been sitting by patiently, waiting to come on the air with us, and we don't want to make her wait any longer. Jan Markell from Olive Tree Ministries in Minnesota joins us. Good morning, Jan.
Well, I'm enjoying your discussion. Very interesting.
Who's right, Jan?
Tim, I vote Tim.
This interview could be very short if you give the wrong answer.
Yeah. No.
See you next time.
No, I'm kidding. It is very interesting to watch what's going on here. It's
like a good pennant race.
Yeah. Jan, what did you? Fred, why don't you introduce the topic? Because.
Yeah, Jan, listening last weekend to your program, as I usually get a chance to do, and you replayed a message from Amir Safari. He's a Jewish believer, travels all over the world speaking, has written many books. And his topic was Europe is ready to accept the Antichrist.
That's right.
That sure got my attention. And he went through various developments there, and we don't have a chance to go through them all. Your program's about an hour long, but he talked about things like architecture of the European Union buildings and that sort of thing. Can you just give us a little sample, and then people can go to your website and listen to the whole program?
Well, sure. They can go to Olive Tree Views as in viewpoint, olivetreeviews.org, and go to radio. And the video version is in this case would be preferred because Amir then graphically shows a lot of the things that he's talking about, and sometimes it does need to be seen. But he summarized in that program, and the following year at my conference, he presented Europe closer to the Antichrist. So even in a year, this would have been back in 2017-18, just a few years ago, the leap that Europe has made in prepping for the Antichrist. And he takes his information obviously out of the Bible, and that is, we conclude with our study of eschatology or end times, that the Antichrist will arrive out of the old Roman Empire, which would be today's Europe. There are many theories out there that they'll come from other parts, Turkey and many other. We believe it would be in the heart of Europe somewhere. We can't go into all the detail. So Amir breaks it down and visually shows things that he sees and sees how parts of Europe, he was referring specifically to parts of Germany, but we don't know. It could be Rome. It could be Switzerland, that'll be his headquarters, Davos. We simply don't know. However, and Fred, I think you would agree, it doesn't hurt to consider some of these things as long as we don't get reckless in our speculation.
No, exactly. But there was, there was the design, the European Union symbol design, some of the designs of the buildings that go to for instance, where does the word Europe come from? Talk a little bit about that.
Say again?
Where does the word Europe come from?
That may have been Europa. I would have to revisit the video because this is Amir's teaching, and I concur with it. I would just have to review it.
Yeah, but the symbolism of the European Union with the stars and the reference to the architecture of the European Union, it's a woman riding a beast, et cetera. This stuff is right out of Revelation, and we're seeing it revealed in the European Union government.
Right, and that's why if folks did go to my website, there is a video version there where they can visually see what you and I are talking about and see the woman riding the beast. There's a woman riding the beast somewhere in is it Washington, D.C. or New York City. It's a symbol for I'm blanking out. It's a symbol for something. I'm not sure if it's Wall Street or where. But as you say, the point is, biblical items are leaping out of the Bible into our newspapers and online viewing today, which is it's stunning if you have eyes to see.
Yeah.
Where can you watch this? Olive Tree Ministries website?
OliveTreeViews.org and go to radio, and there you'll see the audio and then the video version so they can watch all this. And we have it on YouTube and Rumble, but the easy thing is just go to OliveTreeViews, VIEWS.org, and watch it there. Yeah.
And your program two weeks ago featured Michelle Bachman.
Yeah. That was a little bit of a both encouraging and discouraging. Encouraging in that she just started her 40 days of prayer and fasting, and she's got several thousand women, not just women, men, women and men, who signed up starting yesterday to meet on Zoom every day for 40 days to prayer and fast for the country and then also for Israel. And they had no idea. She announced it on my program. She had no idea that thousands would respond. And gentlemen, I think the encouraging thing is there are many, many Americans who are realizing the only way anything can be turned around is through prayer and fasting. Yeah. So some people do get it. They do get it.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we look forward to this weekend's show. Jan Markell, Olive Tree Ministries, Understanding the Times is the name of the radio program. We air at noon Central Time on Sundays and 1 p.m. on Central Time on Saturday. So Saturday, 1 to 2, Sunday, noon to 1 Central Time, you can listen to Jan's program. And, again, if they want to watch the video that you're talking about, Fred, where can they go, Jan? Olive Tree Views.
OliveTreeViews.org and go to radio.
All right, Jan, take care.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Goodbye.
We had Jan scheduled for 10:30 Central. We made her sit there and listen to us for 20 minutes.
She was very polite.
She was very polite.
Interesting.
Yeah.
She got away without us making fun of Minnesota weather.
I know. It's probably gorgeous there this time of year.
It's a turn of the tables her.
That's just,
because it's not like people in the South and the Southeast and Southwest have been suffering. So we kind of tease her when it's snowy and cold, and she could go,
not much out of the year. All right, I'm clicking on Minneapolis where Jan lives. It's 68 right now.
Oh, 68.
But listen, 84, 94, 88, 92. So, I mean, they're going to have some hot days for them ahead. But, I'm not trading that, though.
No, because not if you're going to pick a place to live for 12 months.
No.
You might want to go there this month, but you're not going to go there.
I'd rather be homeless in Miami
than
have a house in Minneapolis.
Huh?
That's a country song right there.
That's.
And I'm talking about in the winter.
Right.
Yes. In the winter, because I've been to Minnesota in the fall. Mm. Like, we went in September.
It's probably gorgeous.
Oh, man.
Do they have change of seasons in terms of trees in New England and all
sorts? Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. We rode on the St. Croix River, and
November
through April. I don't want any part of that.
And there is another downside.
Yeah.
You'd have to live in a place like Minneapolis, maybe, or some of those other crazy towns.
Not me.
Politically.
Or moving out.
You're moving out into the country?
I'm going Billy Joel.
I know who that is.
Moving out.
You're going to live out where the moose roam free?
Well, you know, I'm probably dead either way. Right there. I get carjacked in Minneapolis, and a moose gets me in.
I think you should just stay here, Tim.
I do, too. Just go to my house. I can survive there.
We don't have moose. We got big deer.
No, we don't have moose. Hey, moose are dangerous.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they get most people think of moose like in the cartoons or whatever.
Bullwinkle. Huh? Ooh, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
And what was the moose that the Canadian Royal Mount rode
Dudley
backwards?
Dudley Do-Right?
No, that was a horse, right?
Yeah, he rode it backwards.
Same thing.
Dudley Do-Right.
I just messed up my Canadian folklore there, didn't I, Fred?
That's right.
Well, Dudley Do-Right, is that actually a part of Canadian folklore, or was that just that cartoon?
I think it was just that cartoon.
That was Justin Trudeau's grandfather.
Just the facts, people. That's all we offer here.
That was Dudley Do Wrong.
except when I get off into Canadian folklore, I can mislead people. I'll admit that. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.